One is an often forgotten chapter in superhero movies. The other is perhaps the last time the MCU was ever anything close to concise. Captain America, there he made it. And welcome back to another episode of They Remade It. I'm your host, Stuart.
And I'm your host, Jacob.
And to start off this time, rather than the usual weather update, I'll just give a mild health update. I am currently coming off of some amount of either stomach bug or food poisoning. So if my energy seems a little off, it's because my body wants me to die. And my goodness gracious, if I just told it no today, because I will not leave the people waiting.
I think it's kind of funny because the weather update we have at the beginning is a bit of a runner. But also, even if it doesn't make it into the recording, before every episode, we're like, I don't know how energy is going to be this time around. Before every single episode, one or both of us says that, and then by the end, we're worked up about something stupid, so I have faith.
Yeah, there's some sort of, like, I'm sure there's a term for it, but there's a certain, you know, thing that happens, like, with performers and that sort of thing, like, even if they're, like, deathly ill, if they're able to at least stand and be able to do, you know, at least go out on stage or whatever their equivalent is. They've been known to, like, be able to just kind of push it aside for long enough to do that. So that's sort of what we get, but in more, like, with more vitriol and spite, I think.
Yeah, let's go.
Just, we find some bullshit to be pedantic about and we're like, all right, fuck this specifically.
it's not hard for me to get there.
Same. It's easier for you to get there than it is for me to get there, but I'm always surprised when I get there. Meanwhile, I feel like you're like, okay, let's do this.
Same. I agree. Perfect assessment. The breakdown of the duology of us.
Yeah. So I tend to be more the, not necessarily the optimist, but I tend to hold on to the positive point just a little bit longer until I realize, hey, wait, fuck this. Meanwhile, you tend to see the shit from the trees pretty immediately.
Something about different points of view, something, something, something.
Philosophy, whatever, who gives a shit? My stomach is inside out.
Well, speaking of points of view, why don't you tell us what you've been looking at these past couple weeks?
Ah, that's a decent segue.
Adequate.
Well, you'd be surprised to hear, not a lot, because it's been a combination of busyness and... No, just busyness, actually. Work has continued to be its thing for me, and I try to, you know, be a human and go out and do things occasionally, but... Among those things has not been movies. I honestly don't think I actually have seen any movies since the last time we've done. I've mostly been playing games in my off time. I've continued on with my relapse into, you know, my Skyrim addiction, because that will never die. Mm-hmm. I've actually realized that having now been playing through it a bit more, I've actually just kind of, like, whenever I would previously play, I would tend to just kind of forego anything I passed by that wasn't of immediate interest. Like, there's a billion caves, there's a billion, like, random tombs and everything. I can only fight so many Draugr. But this time around, I've been pretty much just like, if I find it, I immediately go through and do it to as much completion as possible. And I realize I've missed out on like a solid third to half of all of the side quests and like just extra content in general. I'm like, huh, this is a lot more than I was expecting. It doesn't help that I've also added a mod that actually added in a bunch of stuff that was apparently cut right before the game was released by Bethesda. And so it's just a bunch of like extra little add-ons and like smaller like villages and towns and everything that just didn't really make the cut. And so I've just been able to find a lot more stuff to do with all of that. And that's just been my time of just what I call the ADHD run. It's like the moment I see something new, I'm like, ooh.
That's really interesting just because that's how I play. That's how I, and I think a good chunk of people play most games of that type, is it's really easy to just get lost in the world itself. And that's why I tend to stay away from open world titles. And I'm always like, no, I haven't played Zelda yet. No, I haven't played this. No, I haven't played that, because they're all open world games. And I know how those are. I'm not the type of person that can just go through the story. If I see something, it's like, well, I got to go in there and see what's going on. To this day, I have started probably close to 10 Skyrim playthroughs, and I have never made it probably halfway through the actual main story of the game. I've never beaten that game because it's so big.
That's fair. And I've definitely known you well enough by now to know that if you did try to 100% complete that thing, it would boggle you at a certain point. Like, I nearly lost you to the depths that was the doing Brawl to 100, Super Smash Bros. Brawl to 100% completion. I could never imagine what it would do to you to do Skyrim.
I don't have the time that I used to either, so no worries.
Yeah, no. But yeah, like, I don't know what it is. Just in the past, I get so bored of doing the same things over and over at a certain point. So like whenever there was a bit more interesting things going on, and as it was, the main storyline tended to have the best set pieces and different like interesting things you could go do. Meanwhile, like basically everything else, including some of the longer, you know, side arcs, like you can do the Thieves Guild, you can do this like Assassin Guild, the Dark Brotherhood, mm-hmm. like the Mages College and all these things. Even in each of those cases, they're pretty dull and just don't really have a whole lot of teeth to them. Meanwhile, like with the main story, at least, you know, like you at least run into some interesting folks. Like, you know, one of the main characters you run into is voiced by fucking Christopher Plummer. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So it's just, I would tend to just kind of hardline that for most of my playthroughs. And as it was, and also I also realized it's because I would always do Ranger builds in all the other ones. I would just play as a bow and arrow person. And that's not really a great build to do for extant exploring, because most times I'll just run into something that'll just wipe me immediately. Now I'm doing like a two-handed fighter and I just absolutely clear every room I go into without effort. So it's like, okay, cool. I can actually explore now.
That's funny too, because I think it's really easy for just whenever I have played in the past to fall down the archer ranger rabbit hole. But I get to the point where I'm just pumping, I pump stuff into just that tree and that tree alone, and I'm one-shotting everything with my bow, and it's like, I'm invincible. Oh, well, that and sneak, you know, you gotta sneak around.
Oh, yeah. I think also it's just the fact of it was going so slowly with sneaking around all the time that I realized, God, I'm bored, but now I'm actually just, like, running full pelt through these places and able to see a lot more shit a lot more quickly. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, no, this is how it's supposed to go.
That's fair.
So that's just kind of nice. And no, I will never fucking do a magic run because the magic is boring as shit. I've tried it so many times, and I'm just like, okay, so now instead of just worrying about health and stamina, I also have to worry about magicka, which runs out immediately. I'm just going to fucking hit them. Like, I could call upon the ancient gods of this world to shoot an ice spike at someone's head, or I could do the exact same thing with physics. Like,
yeah, summons are really the only magic that's worth anything in that game, just because they can distract the enemy. You know, if you want to put a spectral wolf out there or like an ice giant or whatever.
Right. But yeah, this has been Skyrim Cast. Yeah, that has been, yeah, you can tell I have a very deep connection to that game at this point. And also I'm just like biding my time until Starfield comes out next month. And after that, you will not see me again for at least 2 months. Other than that, the only other thing I've been playing, I've just recently gotten into the last Dragon Age game, Dragon Age Inquisition. I tried to do Origins and 2 and just could not bear it. I think they're just at that age point where I'm like, this is just janky enough that I don't care for it. And I had just come, and this is after me having just come off of playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition, so I was thinking, oh, okay, these early BioWare games are probably not too bad, without realizing, oh, wait, they actually fixed a lot of stuff in the first Mass Effect game for the Legendary Edition. This one hasn't had that yet. This is still very much just an Xbox 360 game that is just driving me up the wall. And I tried 2, and I really wasn't sure what was going on with that. I just didn't feel for it. But I'm actually getting into Inquisition. I don't understand the lore even slightly. I was able to drop into Mass Effect, because I played Mass Effect 2 before I played Mass Effect 1. I was able to drop into the lore for that pretty much immediately, just because there's a decent point of reference with, like, oh, it's just sci-fi. We still got humans and everything. We still got comparable, like, reality to work with. But then I try to go in with, like, fucking Dragon Age, and even just in this one, they're just throwing so much shit at me. It's like, oh, the Chantry is this body made up of, certified wizards. Anyone who isn't part of them is called an apostate. The Chantry has this military branch called the Templars who have rebelled against them, or the mages have rebelled against the Templars, and now everyone's kind of pissed off, and now the Chantry doesn't have mages or Templars, but they sort of still do, but now they don't. People are getting killed. There's a bunch of, like, other stuff. There's a whole thing with a, like, blight of dark demons from before, but now we're dealing with different demons. And I was like, okay, so what do I do? And where do I go? And the game basically goes, okay, demons are invading from hell, stop them. I'm like, cool, that's all you needed. So it's a bit dense for my taste, at least when it comes to the lore, just because it is very much as fucking Tolkien-esque as it can get, but like with a lot more of that modern kind of dark fantasy thing, which is to say, everyone's a dick and everyone's racist. And so it's just a bit hard to take anyone seriously at a certain point. Because everyone's just, like, talking about these super deep and, like, lore-related things and gods and, like, all this, like, religious, like, bigotry and everything. But then also turn around with also just being a complete jackass about everything they do. Like, people remember, the appeal of Tolkien, the appeal of Lord of the Rings was that it was a pretty clear-cut thing of good and evil. Like, yeah, the men, like, the world of men and elves, there was some, like, you know, high and mighty attitudes and everything going on. But you still, there's a pretty direct line of, these guys are virtuous, these guys are not, right? Work with it. And that just, it makes the lore a bit easier to digest. It's like, okay, there's a Dark Lord, and then there's everyone else. That's fine. I can work with that. Meanwhile, on this one, it's just like a billion different things clashing at once. I'm like, God damn it. I just want to know what to shoot at. So it's interesting. I'm waiting to see where it goes. I'm not sure if it'll keep holding my interest, just because it's got everything I disliked about Mass Effect, and not so much about what I liked about it. That being, you know, I love sci-fi and a cohesive plot. And from what I've been able to tell, this is the third game in the series, and it seems like each game in the series just has its own thing going on. Like in the first one, like the end of the Mass Effect series amounts to, oh, there's ancient demons coming after a cycle of 50,000 years to kill all of, you know, all living creatures. You have to stop them. And that's built up for three games. Meanwhile, in Dragon Age, that's the first game. Like, the first game is when they show up. It's like, oh, the demons are here after their 500-year nap, and now you have to stop them, even though no one believes that it's actually happening. It's like, okay, where do you go from there? And so far as I've been able to tell, they didn't do anything with that. In the second game, it's just like, okay, here's this dude who's a refugee from the first game. He just has to build his life back up while getting involved with, like, this whole mage and Templar bullshit. And now in this new one, it's, oh, demons are happening. You have to stop it. I'm like, why connect all of these? Like, what's the plot here?
It doesn't sound like you like this game at all, frankly.
The gameplay is enjoyable. I like the gameplay a bit. There's the whole thing where you have to, like, build up a team and everything and like, build up to face off against this demon incursion and thing. Like, I have a soft spot for that. That's why I like Mass Effect. So it's got that much of it. I need to see where it's going from here. If it continues just to be a bunch of, like, just being led around by the nose and just having people be assholes at me, then I probably won't stick with it. And it seems like that's the trend it's going towards. So, like, everyone was a dick in Mass Effect, but at least they were dicks who were kind of interesting. Also racist, obviously, but, like, you know, at least it was, like, different species. And Dragon Age is, like, 3. Meanwhile, in Mass Effect, there's, like, 20.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, yeah, someone is going to be a little racist towards something when there's this much variation. Meanwhile, it's like, y'all are really in a world of magic and elves and everything, and you're still being racist against your fellow man. Like, can we maybe chill?
I think that's... how deep do I want to go down this rabbit hole? I think when a lot of people are drafting out worlds like that, if they bring a bunch of different types of classes, I'll say, together, you know, or different species or races,
there
or whatever.
There definitely is class in Dragon Age. Like, there's a whole thing, like, dwarves especially are, like, super racist, like, to their own people.
Yeah, I think it's obviously an important issue, and it reflects on modern society and, you know, stuff that we've dealt with as humanity, obviously. But also, to a point, there are some people that use it in their, you know, in their games or their movies, and it's very heavy-handed, and it's like, it feels like an easy thing to throw in to compensate for a lack of world building. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this group hates this group, okay, I get it. So.
Yeah. I don't know. I miss the simpler days of, okay, we hate these guys because they're literal spawns of a dark demon lord, and we don't dislike these guys because they're just elves and a little bit haughty, and that's all.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, thank you, Mr. Tolkien. That's very straightforward of you. And you made it interesting along the way all the same. So, you know, maybe I'm spoiled.
Perhaps, but aren't we all?
Eh, fair. But yeah, with that long diatribe, by the way, that's basically been it. It's been a busy couple of weeks. Haven't really had the energy nor ability to do much else. So if you got more than me, I'd be not surprised.
Well, I mean, I certainly have more than you in way of movies, and to keep with this movie podcast that we have, I'll go into the games that I've been playing recently. So, I've continued to be stuck on Satisfactory. And
oh no.
Honestly, I got to a point where I'm not even playing it that much anymore. Like, maybe half an hour or so, because of the power grid that I got set up now, maybe half an hour or so every day. Sometimes every other day, I'll, like, go in and I'll do something, or I'll move stuff around, or I'll set up another machine to process something. But then I'll just let it run, and I don't touch it. And it just perpetually, you know, it just perpetually runs and makes things for me. And then the next time I get on, I'm like, okay, I can make this, I can make this, deposit this. So it's just, I don't know, it's obviously not perfect, but it feels like that guy that made the perfect SimCity. And it's just like a gray cube of efficiency. And that's what I'm striving towards. Slowly but surely, I want the giant gray cube of efficiency.
Really, the Borg did have it right.
Yes. So
that might be the nerdiest thing I've said in a number of maybe years, and I felt it. That's old school nerd that I just said there. Wow.
No, you're fine. I understand.
But yeah, that's always kind of gotten the gist I've gotten from a lot of those building games, and it's what's kind of actually drawn me away from a lot of them, because I've always wanted to be able to do those things, but I'm always wanting to do them for you know aesthetic reasons or just kind of for having it run like fun. But then it comes that, you know, realization of civic design that if you want this to not be constantly pissing you off, it has to be dull as dirt. It can either be fun and frustrating or dull and good.
Well, I mean, the thing about Satisfactory, at least right now, because it's in early access, is the power grid is really the only thing that you constantly have to worry about when setting things up. If you get that to a good spot, then you can design your factory however you want, because you don't have to worry about, like, tripping the breaker. And then, like, efficiency aside, because you can make something really, like, fantastic and whatever, but it's inefficient because the conveyor belts are all over the place and this isn't transporting quickly enough. But it's not going to break anything. It just means that you may not be getting as many modular frames built as you could in a different configuration. So, it's not as bad as, like, a City Skylines or something. There's not, like, a ton of things breaking constantly. It's really, the power grid is the only thing that you really have to worry about, at least at the stage that I'm in. And if you get that set up, then you're golden to do whatever the hell you want.
I think if ever you get bored of that one, you want something that's a bit more, like, goal-focused. If you've ever heard of Infinifactory?
I have. I haven't looked into it, but I've heard from a coworker.
There was a great period. I played it a year. It's been years now. It was honestly one of the most fun puzzle games I've ever done. So simply for the fact of, like, it is all the, you know, mechanic fun of Satisfactory, but also with a bit, like I said, more of that puzzle and goal-oriented edge to it that really was able to grip me. Just because if given the ultimate ability to just, like, build anything, I've tried Satisfactory, couldn't really stick with it, just because I realized I'm really just making factories for the sake of this being a factory. There's no real end goal other than, like, the milestones they put in place for you. And I just didn't really find a reason to keep going at that point. I'm just kind of realizing there's no real point to me doing this anyway in particular that doesn't just involve me looking up a walkthrough. And so I think, yeah, Infinifactory is a bit more that, a dosage size that I like a lot more. It's also oddly dark, like, when you get into it, because it's this whole thing of, like, I won't spoil it, but there's, like, side characters and side logs you'll find of, like, people who came before you, and it's honestly pretty sad in a few cases. It's like, this is rough. You don't expect it going into it. It's like, I won't spoil the specifics of it if you haven't heard it before. But yeah, it does have a plot line to it. There actually is, like, a reason you're doing these things, and it's surprisingly heavy when you actually think about it.
I see.
But yeah, that'd be a good one if ever you decide, you know, puzzles are more your bag for this.
Well, we'll see. I do like puzzle. I do like puzzle games, but a very specific. You know, I like a Myst, like a Myst or a Riven.
Fair. not personally for me, but I get it.
Yeah. But yeah, and it fills a specific niche where it's, you know, it's something I don't have to consistently play. It's just a little bit here or there. It's like an Animal Crossing. That's never been a game where I sit down and play it for a couple hours. It's like, just management for the sake of management, but I think that has its time and, you know, its time and its place if you're into that sort of thing. So, definitely been engaging with that. Also, with a few friends have been going into Remnant 2 since that just launched not long ago. With the same group of friends, actually, played Remnant, the first Remnant, late last year, and had a blast with it. So definitely wanted to jump into Remnant 2 as quickly as I could. And I've been having a lot of fun with the way it's set up and the gameplay loop and what they've improved and what they've added. You know, I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. It's a game that is constantly trying to present you with story, that I really don't care about. So there is that, you know, yeah. There's diaries everywhere. And here's the thing. I'm a person that really likes lore, but this game is set up in such a way that I can't perceive myself ever playing it single player. I would only ever want to play it with a group of friends, which, again, that's a type of thing that has its time and its place. But I'm not going to sit there and read diary entries while I'm playing a game with friends. So this is the type of game that has a story that I don't think I will ever engage with. So, which is interesting.
I kind of had that with the first game, where, like, there's certain times I want to get interested in it, but I've realized as I kind of, you know, understand Souls-likes more and more, I realize, hey, I'm never going to understand what the fuck they're talking about. So I will get as much engagement as I can stomach, and beyond that, I am good.
I mean, that's the case too. Yeah, it's like, I'm here for the challenge and to play with some friends. Not necessarily the story, not necessarily the writing. It's funny because we were playing and we hit one of the bosses and, you know, he had this, like, dramatic speech or whatever, and he called us interlopers. And one of the guys I was playing with, he was like, you know, I have never heard anyone use the word interloper in real life. It is always just in things like this. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's true. I've never really thought about that. I kid you not, 45 minutes later, we're fighting a completely different boss in a different area with a different scheme style and also called us interlopers. And I was like, okay, well, now I just will never not notice this popping up. So,
yeah. Maybe that's just the term your characters are supposed to have or some shit?
It's not. There's a different term that we're supposed to have. I actually forget what it is. It starts with a P. But anyways, so that's Remnant 2. I'm having fun with it. I think that we're pretty... I don't know when we're going to get a chance to do another session, but I think we're pretty close to the end on that. So, been enjoying my time there. Now for quick movies as we go in.
Yes.
Due to a lot of shenanigans on the Warner Brothers side, you know, the Adult Swim stuff, HBO Max turning into Max, a ton of things have been canceled and let go. And one of those was the Venture Brothers, the Adult Swim show, the Venture Brothers, which I was I was upset about. I was a big fan of it. And it was one of those things where they were constantly building up the story and they constantly had cliffhangers. So it's like you're playing with fire. And then, you know, they get canceled and all that stuff is left unanswered. So they did get a Max exclusive movie, about an hour 25 minute movie that was meant to wrap everything up. And I went ahead and I did a rewatch of the series and then I watched the movie. And it is a great, you know, it's funny. It's one of those things where I was worried about it being hyped up and that's usually the case, but I think it's a great movie, but only if you're obviously only if you're a fan of the series, because it's one of those things that they deliberately built it to be so impenetrable to someone who is not familiar with the actual, you know, story and characters of the show. It's one of those things where you can't even, maybe with the first season and a half, you can just jump into a random episode, but past that point, you're shit out of luck. So, I appreciated it. It's a great movie. It answers every question that I had that they left unanswered. I was surprised that they were able to fit it all into an hour and 20 minutes without it feeling overstuffed. So,
I will say that I do fully understand what you mean of if you don't watch it from the beginning, you won't understand any of it. Because I do remember at least one point I either saw it was either with you guys back in college or someone else where I walked in and someone was watching an episode. And from the looks of it, the best I could sum it up was there was a rotund man wearing a skull helmet talking to a guy with invisible arms and legs and also a guy with a boomerang jaw talking about taking over the world. Meanwhile, they're being lectured over by a woman with a distinctly what was a man's voice, all the while calling her Mrs. the Monarch. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
I'm surprised you accurately just retained a good chunk of characters from the show. You know, I mean, just like, walking into it and seeing it briefly. Well, even down to, like, the names. I'm like the guy with the skull mask. It's like, oh, that's Dr. Henry Killinger. You perfectly described him.
That's his name?
That is his name, yeah.
That's amazing. I didn't just, like, briefly walk by. I stopped and stood and stared for at least a few seconds. And just, like, I couldn't not retain that at a certain point of, like, okay, so isn't this, like, meant to be, like, a parody of, like, the fucking, there was a children's book series that was like two brothers that went on adventures and shit. I think it was just supposed to be a parody of that.
The Hardy Boys. It kind of is. It's Hardy mainly, Boys. That's it. It's mainly a parody of Johnny Quest because the main character is Dr. Venture and he's supposed to be like a grown-up version of a Johnny Quest type.
Gotcha. Okay.
But there's a ton of different things thrown in there. It turned into a point where it's like, okay, now we're parodying Fantastic Four and Spider-Man, like everything at some point. So.
Yeah. No. I saw one scene of that. I'm like, man, I feel like each of these characters has their own, like, major arc in, like, other TV shows. Meanwhile, they're all here just, like, chatting. And this one dude's just, like, talking to them in a very monotone, what I think was perhaps a German accent. I'm not sure. And also just, you know, husky-voiced lady where I'm like, I mean, all right. So I'm, at one point, I think when I was browsing online, I think I just ended up on a video that had fucking a character that was voiced by Clancy Brown. And, like, he was just like this, like, he was basically the Red Skull, but, like, his entire body. I thought he was the most interesting I've seen so far, but my God.
That character did not show up until, like, the second, I think the second to last season of the show, but he has a big role in the movie. But I love that show. It's a great show. I recommend that anyone that hasn't really engaged with it, you should watch it. But, I mean, I also understand that it's quite a commitment because it isn't just, like, go watch the movie. That isn't really going to work. You're probably not going to like it if you just do that.
Gotcha. Good to know.
Yep.
I will consider doing that. But I warn you, I am bad at keeping up with TV shows.
No, I understand. Well, at least there's a finite number now because it's gone.
Hey!
So,
huzzah.
So yeah, that's the Venture Brothers movie. The other thing I saw it in theaters, Disney's Haunted Mansion, the new version. Not good.
I got that impression.
Whoops. I didn't go into it thinking it's any big thing. And it's funny because I've seen a lot of people talking, and it's like, why are they remaking the Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion? It doesn't make any sense. And I was like, well, that movie's not that good either. Like, it's not that. It's just, it's not a good movie. And,
like, they were trying to lightning strike twice with Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's literally all it is, and they're just making movies based on their fucking theme park attractions, which, I mean, it kind of worked for that Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion. I remember hearing that movie, you know, at least made back its budget and then some, but none of them can live up to the pirate franchise, obviously. But, I mean, Disney just had that failed Jungle Cruise movie, so I think that they would be a bit more, or I would hope they'd be a bit more careful, but they can also just throw money around like it's nothing, so.
I just, without wishing to go too much on a tangent, I truly don't think we will ever see the likes of Pirates of the Caribbean ever again, simply for the fact of recognizing how much they went full balls to the wall with it. Like, it wasn't just, like, some cheap tie-in thing of, like, oh, promoting the ride. Like, I didn't even know it was it was based off the ride in Disney for full years after I had first seen it. I saw it and was like, okay, this is a movie in and of its own right. It's got full fucking ships that they're on. It's got full sets and towns and on location and doing all this crazy shit and having characters do, like, you know, talk about wild, you know, pirate myths and legends. And it's amazing. And it's fully, like, they fully just decided, no, we're going to take this to the nth level and we're not going to stop. And for three movies, they didn't. And then for the other two, they really should have. But seeing, like, even the Eddie Murphy one, it very much was like, okay, no, they're just having fun with this. Like, they're just like, okay, we have Eddie Murphy. We're just going to put him in a situation. And it's like, all right, fine. That's no harm, no foul really there. But then I don't get why they did it again. Cause like, why Owen Wilson? Like, I just, like, cause they have to know, like, they're going to have to live up to the first one that they had made. And I'm sorry. It just does, like, Eddie Murphy is a talent all of his own. Why try to do that again?
I don't know. And the thing is that I kind of like what it's going for, where it's all of these characters that get roped into being trapped in this mansion, so you got a lot of different personality types that can play off of each other. But a lot of the time, it just feels so ham-fisted and whiplashy with, like, oh my god, we're literally trapped in here, and this guy's trying to kill us, and if he kills one more person, he gets to take over the world. Oh no! And then the next day, they're laughing, and they're making eggs, and everyone's joking. It's like, what are you doing? You're trapped! For eternity, like, all movies feel like that now. You gotta have your jokey levity, and I'm not saying that you can't have a serious movie without some humor in it, but son of a bitch, if they don't do it in there. And you know what? I like Rosario Dawson just fine. I like Owen Wilson just fine. Danny DeVito, I adore. But it just doesn't work. And speaking of Danny DeVito, he's like shoved into this movie. He does not fit. He barely does anything. He's trapped there with them. But it felt like an afterthought, that character, and it didn't really have to be.
I even got that from the fucking trailers, which is a bad sign. I don't know what Disney is doing lately, but my God, they have just decided to phone it in.
And you know the worst part, not to harp on this because this is the last thing I've seen and then we can jump into our other Disney talk, but the worst part about this is that what I read is that the script for this movie began development in like the early 2010s, like 2012 or so, because Guillermo del Toro was making it. He was the one that was attached. And he left in like 2014 or something. He's like, I'm done working with you. I can't do this anymore.
Because he's a smart man. Yeah. And he has creative he has creative vision, and God knows that concept hasn't existed in Disney for decades.
Yeah.
I'm filled with vitriol going into this, and I'm honestly excited for that. I think this is gonna be a fun little like I'm sure like I said, this is, like if you have any other points about Haunted Mansion, nope. Say so, but I am hooked off and ready for this shit now.
Yeah, let's go.
Captain America, we're doing the MCU, bitches. So yes, as many of you probably don't know, there actually was a Captain America movie before the one of the MCU, that being Captain America: The First Avenger. This first one is from 1990, named simply Captain America. It is directed by Albert Pyun, screenplay by Stephen Tolkien, not that Tolkien, T-O-L-K-I-N, so don't get your hopes up. Story is also by Stephen Tolkien and by Lawrence J. Block, also known as Larry Block. Okay, that's fine. And it is, of course, based off of the Captain America comic series by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. I'm actually going to go ahead and run down the cast as well, just because there's a surprising number of people in this. Matt Salinger plays Captain America / Steve Rogers. Ronan Cox plays President Tom Kimble, with Garrett Ratliff as young Tom Kimble. Scott Paulin plays Tadzio DeSantis / the Red Skull. Massimilio Massimi as the young Tadzio DeSantis. There's going to be a lot of that. Ned Beatty as Sam Kolowitz. Thomas Beatty as a young Sam Kolowitz. Darren McGavin as General Fleming. Bill Mummy, not Murray, it looks similar. Bill Mummy as a young Lieutenant Fleming. Francesca Neri as Valentina DeSantis. Michael Nouri as Lieutenant Colonel Lewis. Kim Gillingham as Bernice Stewart / Sharon, her daughter. Sven Medvezek as Pietro. Melinda Dillon as Mrs. Rogers, Carlo Casola as Dr. Maria Vasili, and Wade Preston as Jack Cooperman. All right, don't hold on to many of those names. It's going to be a lot. Kicking it off, in 1936, in Porto Venere, Italy, the fascist government kidnaps a young child prodigy, Tadzio DeSantis, and kills his family in front of him to use him for an experimental project to create a fascist super soldier. Starting off strong. The procedure's inventor, Dr. Maria Vasili, objects to this cruelty and defects to the United States to offer her services to the Americans. 7 years later, the American government finds a volunteer in Steve Rogers, a frail man who is exempted from the national drafts due to being partially crippled by polio. The formula successfully cures Rogers' ailments and gives him superior strength and endurance, but before any more super soldiers can be created, Vasili is murdered by a Nazi spy secretly working with Lieutenant Fleming before Rogers manages to kill him. Meanwhile, the now adult DeSantis, whose skin was burnt into a scarred red texture by an earlier version of Vasili's procedure, but it still retains physical prowess of equal or greater to Rogers, has become the Red Skull and is planning to launch a prototype intercontinental ballistic missile, ICBM, at the White House. Rogers, now codenamed Captain America, is sent in to neutralize the Red Skull and the missile, with basically no fanfare. It just goes, procedure, go. He penetrates the Nazi launch compound, but the Red Skull defeats Captain America very quickly and ties him up to the missile. As it is about to launch, Captain America grabs the Red Skull's arm and forces him to cut off his own hand to avoid being taken along with him. While the missile is directly over Washington, D.C., a young boy named Tom Kimball takes a photograph as Captain America kicks off one of the missile's fins, changing its course mere yards from the White House and ultimately crashing somewhere all in Alaska somehow, burying itself and Rogers under the ice. In 1992, Tom Kimball is then elected president of the United States, full 50-something years after the first time, after the events at the beginning of the film. A year into his first term, he pushes for aggressive new pro-environmentalist legislation that angers the military-industrial complex, headed up by Fleming, who has now been promoted to general. At a secret conference in Italy, Fleming meets with the Red Skull and other leaders of a global shadow organization. Following the war, the Red Skull has had extensive plastic surgery to partially alter his disfigured features, raised a hit woman daughter, Valentina, because why not, and became the leader of a powerful crime family. In the 1960s, this shadow organization hired the Red Skull and his thugs to murder various Americans who are against militarism and fascism, such as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., President John F. Kennedy, and Robert Kennedy. Yeah, I bet you didn't see that shit coming for this. This time, the Red Skull disapproves of murder and instead decides to kidnap President Kimball and subsequently brainwash him. In Alaska, a team of researchers accidentally finds Steve Rogers' body frozen in a block of ice, and he awakens, still thinking it to be the 1940s. His mysterious reappearance makes international headlines, alerting both Kimball and the Red Skull. After escaping from the Red Skull's thugs, Rogers brushes off Sam Kalowitz, a reporter and childhood friend of Kimball, who had long hounded after the Skull and provided the information about the assassinations. He then hitchhikes his way back to his wartime girlfriend, Bernice, in Redonata in California, in a location in California that I'm not going to try to pronounce. While Bernice still lives in her old residence, she has long since married and raised her own daughter, Sharon, who gives Rogers a series of history videos in order to catch him up to the modern day. Red Skull's thugs, led by Valentina, break into Bernice's house and kill her during their efforts to find Rogers. While visiting Sharon's father in the hospital, Rogers and Sharon learn from the news that Kimball has been kidnapped, and they then vow to rescue him from the Red Skull. Rogers and Sharon visit the secret underground base where he had gained his superpowers to recover Vasily's diary and learn of the original name of the Red Skull. They are then ambushed by Red Skull's thugs, who are defeated by Rogers. They travel to Italy and, in the Red Skull's childhood home, locate an old tape recording of the murder of his parents. Sharon gets kidnapped as a distraction to allow Rogers, who dons his costume, to enter the... Sharon gets kidnapped as a distraction to allow Rogers, who dons his costume, to enter the Red Skull's castle. Okay, that was a little weird. Kimball escapes from his cell, is soon after rescued by Captain America, and teams up with him in laying siege to the castle. In the midst of their battle, the Red Skull pulls out a remote trigger for a nuclear bomb, but Rogers uses the recording of DeSantis' family murder to distract him. Just as Red Skull recovers, Captain America uses his shield to send him off a cliff, killing him. Then, as Valentina comes up from behind and prepares to kill Rogers, she is hit from behind by his returning shield and implied to be decapitated, which is quite a lot. The United States Marines then arrive to save the president and arrest the rest of the conspirators involved in the kidnapping. Rogers and Sharon embrace, and a news voiceover announces the passing of Kimball's new environmental pact, as agreed upon by dozens of other countries around the world. You didn't think it was going to have a Captain America edge? Captain America? A Captain Planet edge to this Captain America movie?
Not at all. Where's my Captain Planet movie?
Captain American Planet.
Even better.
From there, we're jumping about 21 years into the future with Captain America, The First Avenger, our very first MCU movie and potentially our only one. Directed by Joe Johnston, its screenplay is by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, based on Captain America by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. Its cast is made up of Chris Evans as Steve Rogers, Tommy Lee Jones as Chester Phillips, Colonel Chester Phillips, Hugo Weaving as Johann Schmidt / the Red Skull, Haley Atwell as Margaret Peggy Carter, Sebastian Stan as James Buchanan Bucky Barnes, Dominic Cooper as Howard Stark, Toby Jones as Armin Zola, the underling of the Red Skull, Neil McDonough as Timothy Dugan, Derek Luke as Gabe Jones, and Stanley Tucci as Abraham Erskine. Starting in medias res in the present day, scientists in the Arctic uncover an old, massive, frozen aircraft. Jumping directly back into March of 1942, Nazi Lieutenant Johann Schmidt and his men steal a mysterious relic called the Tesseract from a Swedish village, which possesses untold godly powers. In New York City, Steve Rogers is rejected from a World War II military recruitment due to his various health and physical problems. While attending an exhibition of future technologies with his best friend, Sergeant James Buchanan Barnes, Rogers again attempts to enlist. Overhearing Rogers' conversation with Barnes about representing his country in the war, Dr. Abraham Erskine, I'm still getting that right, Erskine. I'm going to go with Erskine. Dr. Abraham Erskine allows Rogers to enlist. He's recruited into the Strategic Scientific Reserve as part of a super soldier experiment under Dr. Erskine, Colonel Chester Phillips, and British MI6 agent Peggy Carter. Phillips is unconvinced of Erskine's claims that Rogers is the right person for the procedure, but relents after seeing Rogers jump on a grenade in order to save his comrades, unaware that it was a dummy grenade as a test. The night before the treatment, Erskine reveals to Rogers that Schmidt underwent the procedure prematurely and suffered permanent side effects, the two having implied to work together. Meanwhile, Schmidt and Dr. Armin Zola harness the energies of the Tesseract, intending to use it to fuel Zola's inventions, mounting an offensive that will change the whole world. Schmidt discovers Erskine's location and sends an assassin to kill him. Erskine subjects Rogers to the super soldier treatment, injecting him with a special serum and dosing him with quote-unquote Vita rays. After Rogers emerges from the experiment, taller and far more muscular, the undercover agent kills Erskine and flees away with a vial of the serum. Rogers pursues and captures the assassin, but he avoids interrogation by committing suicide with a cyanide capsule, only revealing that he works for Hydra. With Erskine dead and his super soldier formula now lost, U.S. Senator Brandt has Rogers tour the nation in a colorful costume as the titular Captain America in order to promote war bonds, while scientists study him and attempt to reverse engineer the formula. Then, in 1943, while on tour in Italy performing for active servicemen, Rogers learns that Bucky's unit was MIA in a battle against Schmidt's forces. Refusing to believe that Barnes is dead, Rogers has Carter and engineer Howard Stark, helping out with the war effort, fly him behind enemy lines to mount a solo rescue attempt. Rogers infiltrates the fortress of Schmidt's Hydra division, freeing Barnes and a number of other prisoners. Rogers confronts Schmidt, who removes a fake mask to reveal a red skull-like visage that earned him the sobriquet Red Skull. Really fancy naming there, Wikipedia article. Schmidt escapes and Rogers returns to the base with all the freed soldiers. Rogers recruits Barnes, Dugan, Gabe Jones, Jim Morita, James Fallsworth, and Jacques Dernier, to attack other known Hydra bases. Stark outfits Rogers with advanced equipment, most notably a circular shield made of vibranium, a rare, nearly indestructible metal. Rogers and his team sabotage various Hydra operations, while he and Carter begin to fall in love. Then in 1945, the team assaults a train carrying Zola. Rogers and Joe succeed in taking Zola, but falls from the train to his apparent death. Using information extracted from Zola, the final Hydra stronghold is located, and Rogers leads an attack to stop Schmidt from using weapons of mass destruction on major American cities. Rogers climbs aboard Schmidt's aircraft as it takes off. During the subsequent flight, the Tesseract's container gets damaged. Schmidt physically handles the Tesseract, causing him to be sucked through a portal it produces out into space. The Tesseract burns right through the plane and is lost in the ocean deep below. Seeing no other way to land the plane without the risk of detonating his weapons, Rogers radios Carter and says his goodbyes before crashing it into the Arctic. Stark later recovers the Tesseract from the ocean floor, but is unable to locate Rogers or the aircraft, presuming him to be dead. Rogers then awakens in a 1940s-styled hospital room. Hearing a radio broadcast of a game that he had attended back in 1941, Rogers grows suspicious, flees outside, and finds himself in present-day Times Square, where S.H.I.E.L.D. director Nick Fury, played by Sam Jackson, informs him that he's been out for nearly 70 years. In a post-credits scene, Fury approaches Rogers and proposes a mission with worldwide ramifications, leading us into what we would know as the Avengers. But that is a story for, well, never, because they didn't do an original Avengers movie. Not to my knowledge, at least.
Yeah, I think this was the last of, like, a failed attempt at starting something up with Marvel, and it kind of sucks, because I think that they had potential. They could have adapted, mm-hmm. like, Captain Marvel, maybe. Yeah. Ant-Man would have been fun.
Yeah.
But,
I've been mixed on Thor, but, you know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
I think Thor may have come out before Captain America.
It did, I just wasn't saying anything.
Shit.
I think Captain America was the last one of that original set.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's actually true.
Which is why, instead of just a regular post-credit scene, it's literally just a trailer, which has become more common recently with Marvel movies. So I've heard. I think I've only seen two in the past 5 years or something. I don't know.
I don't think I've even done that. I'll get into that more later, but yeah, no, I haven't really touched on it.
Oh, but with that, that's out of the way, we'll touch on some Full Circle instead.
Huzzah.
All right, so we've got a number here. We had even more, but I trimmed it down to be more reasonable. And perhaps not surprisingly, we only have one for the 1990 Captain America.
I think I know which one it is.
Oh, is it Ronnie Cox? as President Tom Kimble, who was
why,
also...
Why, yes, it is.
He's also Dick Jones in 87's RoboCop and Veloz Cohagen in 1990's Total Recall.
But of course. It was weird seeing him in this Captain America movie jumping out of a window and then thinking of the moment when he is shot out of a window in RoboCop and realizing, man, they somehow had a better effect of him jumping out a window in this than they did in RoboCop, which is a low bar.
I won't stand for this RoboCop slander.
I mean, you can sit, that's fine.
I mean, I am sitting right now, so I guess I'm just going to have to take it. I was actually surprised because Ned Beatty is arguably one of the biggest names in this movie, and we have not talked about him yet on this show. So he didn't show up in Full Circle, so very surprising. But on to Captain America, the first Avenger, the first one. Kenneth Coy, played Jim Morita. He was also Smith in 2012's Red Dawn, which we just covered.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Richard Armitage was Heinz Kruger in The First Avenger. He was also Claude Becker in 2018's Ocean's 8. Remember we did that?
Oh, shit, yeah.
A big one, Sam Jackson was, of course, Nick Fury. He was also the narrator in 2009's Tarantino film Inglourious Basterds, and he played Pat Novak, speaking of RoboCop, in the 2014 RoboCop reboot.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, like, oh, yeahs in this. I'm like, I forget how many things we've done on this show.
We've done a lot. Stan Lee, of course, was the general that shows up near the end of the movie in Captain America the First Avenger. We saw him as a man in the fair in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man and as the school librarian in The Amazing Spider-Man. So, surprisingly, just Marvel movies. Maybe it's because we haven't covered Mallrats on the show, but Stan Lee's just in some Marvel films. How about that?
I mean, if anyone's allowed to.
And finally, Stanley Tucci was Abraham Erskine in Captain America the First Avenger and was Maestro Cadenza in 2017's Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people in that movie.
There are too many characters. I don't know why we gotta have so many people that we gotta talk through, but I mean, I do agree. We've done a lot of things on this show. We have officially covered 175 movies on this show.
Oh yeah, I was about to say, like, how do we have an odd number? It's because we've had at least a couple They Remade It Agains, and also Godfather Part 3. So
yeah, and we did It, which this the you know Chapter 1 and Chapter
That's
2.
True, yeah.
So it's all over the place, but yep.
But yeah, that's a lot. That is a Christ. There's a lot of stuff going on in both of these movies. I was not expecting the first one to have as much dark shit going on in it as it did. It was somehow darker than the first Avenger. I'm gonna take a sip of water.
Yeah, let me go ahead and jump into it. But it's I was disappointed in the 1990 Captain America for one primary reason, and that's because it got me so excited at the very beginning, because they're demonstrating the effects of the serum prior to the official tests. And they sort of show that, I can't quite remember, it's like a dog or a rat in a cage that has...
It's a rat.
A rat in a cage that has the same effects of the Red Skull, what Red Skull becomes. And it's like this nice puppet, and then it cuts to the scientists, and it cuts back, and it's stop motion. And I was like, oh my god, is this what we're in for? I love it! Nothing else like that. No. The entire movie. I was so upset.
Yeah, one time.
Very disappointed.
The effects in the first one are a bit mixed in general, I will say. I think the makeup effects they did for Red Skull were decent for the time. But beyond that, it was all pretty standard locales as it got right down to it. You know, they went to Rome, which was interesting, but like at the end of the day, there's only so much interest you can pull with that.
I will say, speaking on the Red Skull before we travel too far off, I actually like the design. So the actual Red Skull itself, or himself, like, you know, his actual transformation, I think obviously the design look, even if it's like CG, whatever, looks better in the 2011 version. But I actually like his human disguise a lot more in the 1990 version because it's like an actual effect. You know, it's like he's wearing this skin that's like all stitched together because it's like, yeah, it's like a weird lumpy human mask that's covering his red skullness, as opposed to what we get in the 2011 version, which is like, well, is it a mask? You know, I don't know if that's if that's actually a mask, it's just Hugo Weaving's actual face, and then he CG rips it off, and it's the Red Skull.
Yeah, which I think that makes for a cooler reveal at the end of the day, but yeah, no, it's like, it was at least interesting seeing, I probably didn't expect the Red Skull to get as much, like, longevity as he did in the original, because I've obviously seen the first Avenger long before I'd seen this, and so I was kind of thinking, like, oh, it's just going to stick to the 1940s plot, and then it'll get to, like, the he wakes up in the future later, but no, that's, they pretty much do that nearly immediately, like, Captain America gets his ass kicked and then immediately put on ice, and then we get to just see later that, oh, all the horrible things that happened during the civil rights movement was the result of a literal fascist monster. That's a lot. That's they went for it. They just decided, screw it. This guy is responsible for the woes of the world. And yeah. I'm like, you know what? I can respect it. I can respect the willingness to just go screw it. Which I imagine there's a certain amount of that that's from the original comics. Because I will say, before we get too far into it, I was shocked at the amount of similarities between these two movies. There's not a lot, but there's enough that I was surprised. Like, the entire intro of him getting, you know, like of him getting the super soldier treatment, and then the doctor being immediately killed afterwards, and then the whole thing of, like, you know, he gets frozen on ice and brought into the future and everything. Like, I know that's a big part of the comics, and it seems those have been translated almost point for point in both of these movies, and it's just odd seeing it, because what each one does with it is so wildly different. Like,
right.
We get the fish out of water story immediately with the original. Meanwhile, we don't really get it hardly at all with Chris Evans's Captain America.
Which surprised me, because I had not seen this one before. As I've said before, yeah. I am very behind on, like, all the Marvel stuff. I have seen things here and there. In fact, like, the first wave, quote-unquote, of MCU movies, I've seen the first Iron Man and Avengers, and that's it. And now I've seen Captain America. But that's just sort of where I've lane with that, but I was really surprised that they didn't really go for the fish out of water thing whole hog in 2011, because fish out of water is one of the easiest things to possibly do, and that's why everyone does it, especially when you're working with a pre-existing IP, because it's so easy to just be like, this thing, but in modern times, what? So you can,
wacky,
like, yeah, you can realize, like, oh, I'm familiar with this character, but he's not familiar with me. What if he was? You know, what if Rocky Bullwinkle experienced what I live through from the day to day? Wouldn't that be something? You know,
which people don't realize until long after it's too late, that, hey, the modern day and our modern contemporary lives kind of suck. Why would we ever want to subject our quaint, cute characters to that?
Yeah, I don't know. But, color me surprised. Also, to go into specifics on the 1990 movie, you mentioned, yes, like, Red Skull being responsible for the deaths of, like, these leaders and civil rights movement activists and things. It's funny because, yeah, Captain America gets this spiel from it's the Ned Beatty character, right? The president's friend.
Yeah.
He gets, yeah, this just spiel from him. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, he gets it from a combination of, it's like if the fucking, oh shit, I can't remember his name now, the dude in Jurassic Park from Seinfeld. Not,
oh,
Seinfeld.
Wayne Knight,
yes. It's like if Wayne Knight just got, like, turned... Wayne Knight's character in Jurassic Park was instead a conspiracy journalist and flat earther, basically, and just, like, picks up Captain America and then immediately gets hijacked by Captain America.
Yeah. Also, slight tangent, because you brought that up. I love that you brought up Jurassic Park, because, full circle, Sam Jackson, who we're talking about today,
oh, yeah,
Jurassic Park, and Toby Jones, who is the Hydra scientist in the first Avenger, is the auctioneer in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. So, there you go.
Yeah.
But,
huh. Sorry, a lot of netting today.
Yes. Anyway, I can't pass up a full circle. Are you kidding me? But, anyways, it's funny because when Ned Beatty picks him up in that scene and he's talking through all these things that Red Skull has done, Captain America's looking around the car, and he's very comically seeing, like, the Made in Japan and the Made in West Germany. He's like, this guy's a spy. Like, it'll be clear if, like, Ned Beatty pulled up, like, a pot of fettuccine Alfredo from under his seat. And he's like, hey, you want a bite, Captain? And it's very comical.
Pulls up a bratwurst on a fucking twerk. Some schnitzel, yeah, perhaps? Just Captain America realizing, oh, dear God, we lost.
Are you familiar with Kabuki theater, Captain?
Yeah, there's this, like, I wish this movie was just that for, like, the entirety of it, of him just, like, recognizing it, just, like, a lot of just very blatant cutting at like modern American sensibilities and being like, how have we changed from our days in World War One or World War Two or whatever? And just like through the eyes of this dude who is almost certainly for his day and age, for the modern day and age, a completely backwards hick. We get right down to he's probably distinctly kind of racist and distinctly just out of touch. And it's just like, I would love just to see this entire movie where just that, rather than we get, you know, ultra Mussolini running his like, running his Balenciaga assassin group around the world, like, which was just the funniest shit in the world. Just seeing all like, there's a whole thing where Red Skull has a team of assassins, one of which was his daughter, which I didn't even clock the first time through that it was his daughter, but I probably just skipped over that part. But he just has this like group of what are straight up just fashion models, just being assassins, which I'm like, okay, yeah, he's Italian. That actually makes sense in this case.
Yeah. I think that would be a better movie, too, if it was just Captain America's comical errors, because the Captain America in the 1990 film has no reason to be a super soldier. He does not seem like a super soldier at all. Like, in the MCU film that we watched, Captain America's signature move is to, like, fling his shield into a punch, right? You know, those are the two things that he tends to do, and he'll die for, you know, his fellow soldiers, for his fellow man. In 1990 Captain America, that Captain America's special move is to pretend he has a tummy ache so that he can hijack a car, which he does twice.
That's astonishing. Like, I saw it, like, they did it the first time. I was like, really? That's how you go about it? Like, at the very least, I would have, if he had just, like, decided to just straight up deck this guy and just, like, knock him out, then steal his car, I would have been like, okay, I get it. He thinks he's currently being kidnapped by a German spy. But the fact that this, the symbol of American gusto and strength, had to, like, pretend to have diarrhea, walk out of the car, have him follow him, which he didn't even have a guarantee that he would have been followed. Like, he might have just, like, waited in the driver's seat, then he would have been shit out of luck. But he had to then be followed, and then just, like, fully psych and just run back to the car and just leave him where he was.
Like, it's not even an action movie run, it's like a jog.
Yeah, and then when they started doing it the second time, I was like, you do not have the stones to do this again. I had better see this actor straight up actually throw up if this is the same bit over again, which doesn't even, then it does end up being that bit again, much to my sadness, and then it ends up being useless, because she immediately, like, he drops off his, like it's the daughter of his ex-girlfriend, who is, well, now dead girlfriend, who is played by the same actress, which, like, all right, there's a whole lot going on in there, but whatever, who then he like ditches her, he drives off, he tries to get directions from an Italian lady, he obviously doesn't speak Italian, and then somehow she appears right beside him, having like somehow caught up with him in a car, and then starts speaking Italian for him. I'm like, why did we, I could get that this scene, it might exist in real life, that a dude stole a car, came back, and then maybe she did superhuman speed to come and help out, like, okay, yeah, there's a reason for that, like, hurdle. Otherwise, you just wasted a good 10 minutes of our time. I don't get it. I don't get anything that this movie is doing.
Which I guess, God, I was cackling the second time that happened. I could not believe it.
Yeah. Which, I feel like at this point I should address some amount of the first Avenger, but it's simply for the fact of it is such a early MCU movie that it is so straightforward, it's hard to really pick out anything in particular out of it. And simply for the fact of it's at least decently acted for the most part. But it's just, it's hard to watch that versus the train wreck that is going on in the 1991.
I will say, for 2011, I was surprised that Tommy Lee Jones was in this movie, because he is such a prickly bastard that will not play ball. But you have to remember, this is early MCU. They could not get Tommy Lee Jones to give a shit today.
No.
He would not coming for one of these movies.
Thank God. He is above the shit now. But, like, it's so, because I'm doing my best not to refer to other MCU movies, because, like, we have the benefit that this movie is early enough in the whole MCU line that we can avoid a lot of the shit that happens later on. Because at this point, Disney has only recently owned Marvel at this point. Like, they acquired Marvel after Iron Man, at least. But I think they, like, acquired it, like, right after or something like that. I don't know. There's some whole thing where they acquired the rights of Marvel, then they, like, Marvel Studios specifically, at, like, after the fact. All I know is this is early enough in that line that it wasn't just the cavalcade of shit that it is nowadays. So I'm more than willing to be a bit more lenient towards it, just because, okay, we haven't established the whole bag of snakes that it is to the modern day. And to that end, it's really is about as straightforward as it can get. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing here, because having rewatched it, I forgot how lacking in stakes it all feels. It's like, I don't know how else to put it. It's going through it all, the only moments I ever felt like there were real stakes going on were like early on in the film, where we're like first seeing like Rogers like become the, like Captain America and everything, and like, okay, there's actually some sense of threat and humanity going on. But by the end, it just becomes a CG fest so quick, and there's just like all like the lighting effects and the sound effects going on, where it's just like it's gone from a somewhat intense, you know, like a slightly intense World War II, you know, like fictional historical film of, you know, this guy leading his, you know, special troop against these, you know, super Nazis, essentially. But then just by the end, it's like, okay, we're in the very CG'd Alps, where he has his team riding in on zip lines from apparently a higher mountain than the one they're currently in. I had to think about that for a minute. It's like, wait a minute, where are they ziplining from into this window overlooking the Alps in front of them? Is there just another mountain straight across? And it's just moments like that of realizing, yeah, nothing matters anymore.
Yeah, I had a hard time caring about a lot of what was happening, which is funny because, yeah, again, I don't want this to just turn into MCU thing, even though that's part of the benefit of doing this movie, is like the, an MCU episode? Woo! It's so easy to bag on, but I struggle to put myself in the place of watching this when it was new, where it's like you said, we don't have to worry about the cadre of all these different movies that intertwine and the streaming TV shows that apparently everyone but me watches and then never talks about.
I'm with you there.
They die.
I'm with you on that one. The only one I've actually seen, I've seen WandaVision just because that was the first one to come out, and I've seen Loki just because I like the whole like style that it's going for. Beyond that, haven't touched a single one.
Which is fair, but and to that end, like trying to ignore that, it's like, oh, I can see some cool things are being done here, even if it is CGI, and I'm sure there are people that like this because they watched whatever Filmation Marvel flipbook show was on in the 70s, you know, those action comics where it was just, television shows were just comic panels with people talking over them, which is like, well, you have to be really bored. But I would rather play with a carrot than watch an action comics on the TV. But with
that's just a very funny sentence.
To that end, I can see the enjoyment that could be gotten out of this. Just, for example, the Tesseract. It's like a blue CG light that shoots out and vaporizes soldiers. From, like, a perspective of early Marvel, I can see that as being, like, a big stakes, like, oh, wow, oh my god, like, this is, you know, that's cruel, or that's kind of cool, and it just instantly kills these guys. Fast forward however many years, over a decade, literally over a decade, we have the trailer for the Marvels that's out now, and there's some bitch, some high mighty queen or whatever that has a scepter, and she slams it on the ground, and a big purple light comes out, and it's like, oh, look, it's the flashing colors, that means something's happening, like, I just can't be bothered. And that really puts a damper on going back and watching a movie like this, because I cannot separate it, no matter how hard I try. I saw that blue Tesseract thing, and literally what I was thinking about was that trailer for the Marvels.
Yeah, it's just, it feels like it's kind of, it hasn't quite gotten to the Dragon Ball Z issue, where it's like, oh, we have this strong character that this our main character has to defeat. How do we up the stakes for our next iteration? Just make it like it goes from, you know, here's another member of the super strong race. Now we have to fight this other guy. Now there's this, you know, the leader of all these guys. Then there's this guy's dad or brother. Then there's this guy's god. Then we go, this guy, the god of this god. And it just keeps going like that. And it feels like we're in a similar position here now, where we've established that there are entities and forces that have just kind of like dwarfed everything we've seen before. And so everything just kind of hits this weird level of like staleness and kind of just ubiquitousness, which is probably the wrong word, just sameness feeling, where we just don't really have any idea how to feel threatened anymore. Which I think better comparison, the Transformers movies. Is like, I think, because in the first movie we get, oh, the humans, like, Transformers have never been to this world, it's like this whole situation we're having to figure it out. Then in movie after movie we learn, oh no, they've actually been here for at least a few decades. Oh no, before this it's actually been a few centuries. Oh no, they were here at the beginning of humanity. Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, every time they're just finding progressively bigger sharks to jump over, to the point where it's less water than sharks. And I just...
Yeah, so, for example...
It's hard, so I get what you mean.
For a good Marvel example, I'm about to spoil a movie. It's from last year, early last year MCU movie. I do not care. The Thor Love and Thunder. It's like this big thing where they're going to the ends of the universe, literally like the door of time, and this guy's going to wish for the end of gods as we know it or whatever. Super big stakes, at least for the realm of the movie and for, you know, Thor as a character because he's inherited from the gods. And he puts an end to it, and that's a pretty big threat. And the stinger on the movie is Hercules.
Oh yeah, like the end credit scene.
What good could Hercules do? What is he like, gonna do?
Which also, I'm gonna do probably the most quibbly thing I'll ever do here, but the mythology nerd in me cannot let it stand. They establish Hercules in the movie. They prior in the movie establish Zeus, the character, like the god Zeus. That's one of the people they encounter slash fight. If it's Zeus, Hercules should be named Heracles. Hercules is the Roman name, but Disney, being the fuckers that they are, established it in the animated movie all those years ago as Hercules, and now we're doomed to it. And I'm just like, can't you just for once get that name right? It's just like, I just either make it Jupiter is his father, or just make his name Heracles.
I understand to a point, because I really don't care about
Greek god stuff,
but I do understand your plight of things not being right, because I deal with that constantly.
No. It's just like, it's the simplest thing, it's the most quibbly thing, and I'm tired, and it's coming, I'm realizing the vitriol at Disney is coming out at this point, and it's not even having to do with Captain America anymore, and I knew that's where this was going to get to at a certain point, but Disney has so much freaking money, has all the writers in the world that they need, can they not, like, one moment of continuity? They can't even maintain good continuity in their own shit. Could they at least do it with the extremely well-known names of extremely well-known gods? I'm just like, it's so deeply infuriating. And I will drop it here. I will go back to just like believing that so far the latest movie that's come out is Captain America: First Avenger. I needed to get that off my chest at least.
So to go back to the 1990 movie, why was Red Skull, like, gonna detonate a bomb next to a piano on a hill?
Yeah, you know? I think it's because he's Italian.
That's as good an answer as the movie gives.
I tell you, I'm fully recognizing, I think the plots of both of these movies are purely defined by the different heritages of each of their versions of the Red Skull. Because the Red Skull in the 1990 version is Italian. He's kidnapped by the, you know, fascist government of Italy, of, you know, Mussolini and whatnot. He grows up to, you know, he has this one missile while he's wearing his like Balenciaga suit, and which I know isn't an Italian brand. I think it's Belgian or whatever, or Austrian, sorry, but still. He's wearing just this just beautiful jacket and everything while he's looking like, you know, fried ham. He does the whole thing. He gets caught by Captain America, and instead of just punching him once to get his arm free, he goes full drama and cuts his entire hand off with a knife. Like, not even, like, in one fell swoop, goes off with a knife. Just the most dramatic bitch in the room at all times. Goes on to be the head of a fashionista, like, shadow government with his, again, you know, Vogue, cover of Vogue assassins. Has all this stuff going on, riding around in limos, living his best life, essentially. And culminates in him in a literal old, like, Roman castle, holding people hostage, holding the president hostage, and about to detonate. And of course it was going to be up on the top, the highest point of the tower, like, on the highest point of the castle, with a beautiful grand piano there to, like, to be with him. It's just, I honestly have so much respect for this goddamn character, because it's just like, he just decided, screw it, I'm going to be the weirdest guy in the room at all times, and I'm going to look good doing it. Meanwhile, we have the Johann Schmidt character in the First Avenger, and it's basically just, look at all of these wacky devices I've built. It's like, okay, so the Italian has fashion, the German has machines. Got it. It's like, the entire thing is fully defined by it. Because the first one, it's all about these, like, shadowy things and, like, assassins and looking hot doing it. And meanwhile, the other one's just, like, planes, silly helicopters, lasers, giant underground facilities, giant bombers. It's all just, like, it's just if you just put a German engineer from the 1940s, locked him in a room with nothing but a bucket of gasoline, and just left him for 3 days, and then made a movie out of whatever sketches he made.
Oh my god, it's such a waste, too. He's like a super soldier as well, but they don't operate off of that hardly at all. You see him, like, punch Captain America's shield, and it leaves an indent. But at least the fucker in the 1990 movie is, like, doing things. He barely does anything in 2011. He relies entirely on his little Hydra scientist, played by the great Toby Jones, who, I must say, is a highlight in this movie. I love Toby Jones. Absolutely. He was a beacon of light in the darkness that was Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is the worst of all the Jurassic Park movies, but he was a treat in that. Of course, those that have not been watching all of these newfangled movies I've been watching, Probably know him best as the voice of Dobby in the Harry Potter movies. But really, Toby Jones is pulling this whole thing together. Him and Tommy Lee. Everyone else, I could take or leave, honestly.
The Joneses, man.
Oh, yeah, the Joneses. Keeping up with the Joneses, man.
Yeah, seriously. Like, just two genuinely good actors. And I thought Chris Evans was good as Captain America. He's about as, you know, apple pie of a motherfucker you can possibly make, which is perfect for the character.
I think he's interesting before they give him the soldier serum, because he's, like, actually a character. Or at least that's how I
feel. Yes. I think, like, he's a damn sight better than the Captain America in 1990. Like, I know he's ultimately more interesting to talk about, but he is a shitty Captain America. When it comes right down to it, he constantly is getting his ass whooped. He's hiding at all occasions that he can. He barely uses his shield for the most part. He looks terrible in the suit, and he's just kind of a dick.
Yeah.
It's just like... He steals two people's cards with this cards with the same stupid bit. Like, this is the best man we could get for the job. Like,
I love that bit. I hope that was taken from the comics. I hope that's something that Captain America does.
Oh my god, that'd be amazing. But yeah, it's just yeah. But like you're saying, like you're saying, yeah, the Red Skulls in this could not be any more different. Simply for the fact of one of them actually kind of won for a long time, like. The Johann Schmidt character, he just kind of gets his ass whooped pretty much consistently. He loses all of his resources. He gets, you know, shot off into space, where he comes back as a cameo in, like, Avengers Infinity War. Not even played by Hugo Weaving, mind you. But then we have, you know, Mr. Italiano. He whoops Captain America's ass, sends him shooting off to the, you know, White House. Fails on that front. Doesn't sit on his laurels, though. He decides, okay, I'll just keep at it. I'll let the war go on as it is, but then I'll be responsible for all the woes of the latter half of the 20th century. Like, holy shit. Like, that's a lot. This is a villain who won, realistically. And, like, the damage he's done, it's not going to go away just for the fact that he's dead by the end of the movie. Like, he's kind of, like, unless they start dismantling a lot of stuff, that's going to be around to stay for a while. I don't care how many environmentalist things Mr., you know, Omnicorp CEO does.
Yeah, I think he came away the victor, and he went out in a blaze of glory with a fabulous piano, and
my god, like,
he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. It's astonishing.
Which, by the way, because you were talking about the president, it reminded me, some of the moments in this 1990 movie have such whiplash, which is bizarre to say, because it's just the pacing is off, because there are some things that should take longer, and there are other things that don't need to be long at all, like when they're sitting in the cafe in Italy or whatever. That scene goes on interminably long. But then when Captain America, when his body is first discovered and he breaks out of the ice and flees,
oh my god!
Someone takes a quick picture, and it was like, wow, did you see? I can't believe that just happened. Did you see that? Immediately, the president's reading a newspaper with a photo on it, and it's like, that's the guy I saw when I was a kid, and he calls Ned Beatty, and I'm like, whoa, slow down, movie.
Yeah, like, he does not hesitate at all. Like, they break him out of the ice. He walks out fully conscious, just goes out the door. Like, and then it's just like, he somehow gets from Alaska to the middle of California. And it's just like, I know ultimately he still hijacks that one dude's car, but still, like, there's a bit of, it's a bit of midway. You'd think there'd be, like, interviews and shit at this point with, like, how quickly the information got disseminated. It's just, I don't know. I don't really know what their goal was with having him in the future. Like, I know ultimately it's meant to be, it's the climax of the 2011 version, but, you know, they could have done it with a bit more bravado.
Yeah, it's poorly, I like things about the 1990 Captain America. It's just overall, it's a mess. It's structured really strangely. There are things that I think they wanted to do more with, they didn't end up doing. Like, you mentioned it in the synopsis, but they find his old Red Skull's old childhood home, and they find this recording of when his parents were killed and he was abducted. And so Captain America, like, he plays it on this thing that she recorded the sound off of, and it distracts Red Skull from hitting. Well, he's not even hitting the button, because there is no button. It's like a timer thing. So I guess he kind of just distracts it. I don't know. I don't know what purpose that really served. Unless he was going to hit a big red button, and then he's, like, not hitting the button.
Like, it is weird that in the climax of the movie, the way that the villain is defeated is by taking advantage of his PTSD.
Yeah.
that's a very weird realization.
Can we not just go around triggering people, Mr. America?
It's Which is weird to think about, like, it's odd how much of a sort of, like, they sort of make him, like, a tragic figure in the beginning of this, of recognizing, like, yeah, this poor kid got kidnapped and tortured to become this figure. And then he became, like, you know, the most evil Nazi to ever live. But it's weird how much, like, humanity they inject into the guy, all things considered. But, you know, opposed to that, we never get anything about, you know, Johann Schmidt's early backstory, other than he worked together with the Stanley Tucci character, and he was a bit of a jackass. Like, that's about it. The only thing we learn about him is that he is so bad he hates Hitler. Like, he somehow makes Hitler look nice.
Yeah.
In fact, I still... Okay, whenever I first... This is a small thing, and obviously I have a lot of similar feelings you have on this, since we're running to that point in the recording time.
Sure.
But the first time I saw this movie, and they first did the Hail Hydra salute, and they had both, not just one arm, but both arms up, and instead of a flat open hand, it's a fist, I was like, are y'all, like, serious? That's... You decided, okay, how do we make these guys worse than Nazis? They're double Nazis. The first time I saw that in the theater, I had to try everything not to laugh. It was the stupidest shit I had ever seen. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I gave credit to the 1991 of the fact that they had the spy character kill the scientist character. He straight up full belt goes Heil Hitler, arm extended with a gun in the other hand, and point blanks a person like while killing them. Like, yeah, they just went there. They just went, no, this guy is as full true blue go to hell Nazi as you can get. It's like, screw it.
I hate to say,
was the MCU really too timid just to make Schmidt a Nazi? Did they have to just be like, oh no, he's even worse than one?
and that's the thing too. Can we stop trying to rely so heavily on the Nazi imagery? Like you said,
yeah.
if it's a Nazi, go for the Nazi. You don't need to try to outdo the Nazis because they already exist to the point where if they are literally, whether you think that they exist now or not, because I know that's a big contentious thing. It's a joke at this point. Like, it's something that we often, I don't know. It gets really frustrating. That actually reminded me, like, because we were talking about the Venture Brothers earlier. There's a character in that show that's just is. I think her name is Girl Hitler, and she it's just a woman with a Hitler mustache, and she calls her, and her name is Girl Hitler. And that was the early 2000s. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't see why it had to be like these guys even worse than the Nazis. The Hydra thing. And I'm sure that's a comic thing, because I know Hydra's in the comics, but I don't know.
I'm almost certain in the original stuff, like, I think Hydra is meant to be, like, the special division that Red Skull is, like, head of, but otherwise he is distinctly a Nazi, like, in the comics. Like, it's not, like, a whole thing of, like, oh, he's just fully broken off from the Nazi party. Like, no, they're still a Nazi group. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I'm pretty sure it's just the MCU early on, they were just like, we don't want to, like, fully go there this early on. Just because, like, I think it's also having to do with a lot of international release stuff. There's at least a few countries, I think even Germany, including Germany, where displaying of, like, the Nazi swastika is fully barred. Like it's one of the things of, like, you know, you can't have a gay scene in it, otherwise it'll get banned in Russia or whatever. You can't have a Nazi symbol in it because it might get banned somewhere else. I think that's part of why they did that, which honestly makes it worse. it's all come down to just, like, marketability. It's like, can we not? Like Indiana Jones did it. Can we just try, please?
Yeah, Indiana Jones is still doing it, for as much as, you know, you can say about Dial of Destiny, like, the villain in that movie is still the Nazis, like...
Yeah, they at least make it, yeah, he is just a Nazi, like, they don't mess around with it.
Mads Mikkelsen isn't, like, the head of a group that is, like, trying to overthrow the Nazis, at least I don't remember that being the case.
At least he's just trying to continue the legacy, I'm guessing.
Oh, well, yeah, because it's like a, you know, it's a future thing, and it's like, yeah, okay, yeah. But still, it's not that far removed.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just weird having moments like that early on in the MCU of just, like, saying, like, man, they really couldn't just commit to it? And it's just seeing that stuff early on of realizing, okay, this is kind of a bellwether of how things are going to go forward. Of just that, like, trying to outdo itself in ways that actually make it more stupid, and... You know what, I at least I want to hate the 1990 version more than I do, because it's a janky film, its action sequences are pretty pathetic, its main character is terrible as Captain America, it's a pretty inconsequential plot when you get right down to it, and a lot of times it just doesn't make sense. But damn if it didn't try. Like, it's done more with what it had than a lot of movies we've seen on this. Like, for God's sake, it feels like it's a movie from the 70s or the 80s, but if only for the fact that the video is so clear that, yeah, it's obviously from the 90s, but its effects and everything, I'm telling you, like, this is not 90s level. We've had Jurassic Park was out at this point. And I don't know. It's just, it was able, it took more risks with the concept than I think anyone would be willing to do nowadays with a character, which is weird when you think about it, because the original thesis of Captain America was a personification of American idealism punching fascism in the face. Like, literally, that's it. It's literally a dude meant to punch Nazis.
Yeah. I guess because we're pretty well near the end of this, I just, my final thoughts in regards to this are, I think that 2011, generally speaking, especially because it's at the start of the MCU, even if it's not taking a lot of risks, it does things that I do like, and it has some actors that I think are doing well. I think overall it's a better made movie, and I do think that it's not something I'm going to run out and watch again, but I think if I had the choice, I would pick this over the 90 version. That being said, I don't think 90 is a good movie, but I certainly don't hate it. I had a fun time watching it, and I think it's a cool notch in my belt, you know, something that I can pull from, but it's not a movie I would watch again. This is the type of thing where if you and I were to, like, do, like, syncable commentaries or something, this is the type of movie that I would want us to, like, watch together. You know, something like the 90 Captain America.
Yeah, it's like, I think the best way I could put it for me is, I have watched Captain America First Avenger with several people before, several different friends in the past, like family members, girlfriend, that sort of thing. And in all cases, I enjoyed it. I thought it was an enjoyable thing. I think it's a pretty risk-free thing to put on when you have a bunch of people over and you just want something at least in the background. The 1990 version is something I would like to show people just to go, hey, y'all ain't never seen this before, have you? And just to get people's reactions and just the bullshit we can pull from that. And I think that is extremely admirable. But ultimately, yeah, I recognize, like, I'm still very much of the mindset of there are very few cases where I truly actively enjoy watching poorly made films, and I will ultimately still pick the, you know, the First Avenger just as a quality film before the original every time, but I'll be damned if it's not interesting to talk about.
Definitely. No, yeah, this is something that I would love to show people. It's like The Phantom, which I think came out around the same time. It reminds me a lot of The Phantom, actually.
We gotta watch that together.
Oh yeah, we should watch The Phantom.
Yeah. Screw it.
Why not?
Yeah, a fair amount of waffling on this one, but I think there's only so much. Like, that's the sad thing, is that the movie that's interesting to talk about is bad, and the movie that's less interesting is better. It's like, ah, damn.
Yeah. What are you gonna do? I guess.
Like, it's a trap between a rock and a boring place. That's just be the description of the entire MCU, honestly.
Yeah, it's. I saw a tweet, the other day, or an X or whatever it's called. It was basically just every MCU movie that comes out post Eternals and does not talk about the giant statue covering half of the Earth makes it infinitely funnier that no one is talking about the giant statue coming out of a big section of the Earth. And I agree with that assessment.
I kind of forgot that was a thing. Man, what the fuck is the MCU at this point? My God. I think the best way I saw someone describe it was, throughout the course between, like, whenever they started getting onto the whole multiverse kick, because, you know, obviously, like, that started kicking off, like, once Spider-Verse did, they were like, oh, we gotta do it. I think they established throughout it that something like 3 or 4 different characters could be personally blamed for just setting off the multiverse as a concept throughout the world, throughout the MCU universe and everything. And I think that alone was enough for me to realize, hey, we have no idea where this shit's going anymore, do you? Like, you guys have fully just decided, screw it, we're just going to start just throwing shit at a wall and see what sticks. And as it turns out, not a lot's sticking anymore because you've made it so damn complicated and so off the wall. Like, between Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, Loki, and I think, like, and Wanda, all those characters each individually has messed up and broken the fabric of reality to the point of, like, near destruction of realities entirely. And I don't know which one they're going with the most because they all conflict with each other now. So I'm like, what is going on anymore?
But and each of those multiverses is its own separate multiverse.
I guarantee you that's what they're going to try to do to fix it. Where they're going to be like, oh, all this was happening in separate situations. So all the movies that did poorly in the box office were in different universes. And they're not part of the main line anymore. And I am honestly confident that that's exactly what they're going to try to pull at some point. Of, oh, this didn't happen. Like, we're going to brush Eternals completely under the rug. Because if no one in this universe, in our world, cares about it, no one in that universe will either. And there's so much schadenfreude going on now of them realizing, hey, the nostalgia bubble has popped, and you can't just keep throwing out drivel anymore. You need to make a quality film, and you need to do it quick. It's like Barbie showed up with a good movie. A lot of other movies have shown up with good movies, and they're the reason they're successful. It's not just because of brand recognition anymore.
I'm just like, the biggest thing
it's crumbling.
I think one of the biggest things that they're fucked on, though, is that I think still their biggest disappointment is that new Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania with the MODOK and everything. And they have built that up in a way that's separate from a lot of the other MCU movies, because that has a big Kang the Conqueror thing in it, and he is the next big baddie that they're building up for this phase. So I don't think that they can quietly sweep their biggest failure under the rug, because it is the linchpin in so many of their plans right now. And that is that is even funnier than the giant Eternal statue.
Like, that's the thing. I never even fully saw Eternals. I just got the gist of it. I thought they were setting up Galactus with all of that, because like Galactus is also a Marvel threat. Because like, he's about as straightforward as it gets. He just eats planets. Like, that's it. And instead, they have the Kang the Conqueror thing going on, which they kicked off with Loki. Like, he was first established as a character in Loki.
Right.
And the fact that it bombed so hard, and also now Jonathan Majors is under some flack.
That's also true.
I'm just like, yeah, you guys don't have a plan anymore. Like, you guys really thought you had something going, and now it's all getting upended. Meanwhile, also, your TV shows are getting worse and worse and worse. God knows I'm not even going to try with Secret Invasion. And it's just, it's all crumbling around their ears. And it's just like, wow. And now, of course, like there's the writer strike going on, the actor strike going on. It's apparently paused something like 4 different Marvel projects. I'm just like, the god now bleeds. It's finally ending. It's over. So it's like, I'm so giddy about it. I'm just like, I want to see it crumble so bad. Oh,
and that's the thing,
I'm getting,
is that
getting too much enjoyment from this.
If they just kept it, I know that you get sucked into this money machine, because I mean, just the Avengers saga alone, the Age of Ultron aside, I think it did fine at the box office, but the other 3 Avengers movies pulled so much bank that you just got to keep driving this interconnected web of stuff. And it probably wouldn't have made as much immediate cash, but there probably wouldn't have been as big of a drop-off if they had just kept it simple. Like, I don't mind a movie about, like, whatever superhero that I've never seen before. Like, I'll go and see it, but I have less incentive to see something if I got to watch 10 other things to get caught up on it. And if you keep inviting back the same writers that are writing jokes I don't like, and directors that are directing boring scenes.
I hope there's a special spot in hell for Joss Whedon for what he's done to movies.
Maybe. I don't know.
You know what's happened? Marvel has, like, Disney has turned the MCU into just, like, normal comics, where it's just all this convoluted bullshit that you have to have read up to at a certain point. And there's been like 3 different reboots and everything. I'm like, yeah, no, that's they've done it. They somehow took this very good thing and made it the most complicated bull roar that only the most dedicated fans are going to get into. And the thing is, at least with comics, they at least still appeal to certain people. I don't know who the Marvel the MCU is appealing to anymore. So
the real death knell of that, I think, is because we're fully just MCU chat right now, which was kind of expected, but
absolutely.
The start of the movie, the start of Captain America, the First Avenger, it has the Marvel Studios ident, and it was so glorious because I had not seen that ident in forever. And it's basically a bunch of comic panels flashing by up into the Marvel logo, because these movies come from, you know, the comics. That's where they take their inspiration. The new Marvel Studios, not a comic in sight. It's references to the other movies, because that's all Marvel is now. It doesn't give a shit about the comics. I don't know who MODOK is. It's pulling from the movies that already exist. And that's...
Yeah.
We can boil it down to the ident changing, you know, how bad it's gotten.
Well, I'm glad it's all dying. That's all I got to say about it. I'm glad Spider-Verse continues to do well, because, you know what? I like Spider-Man. Spider-Man's my favorite Marvel character. He always has been. He always will be. And God only knows what the DC is going to be doing.
Yeah, well, they shit the bed more often than not. And I frankly, I don't understand it. They have a bunch of chunkle fucks working at that studio, hiring writers and directors or whatever. Just let me get a Super 8 camera, and I could make a fucking DC movie. I'll make a Riddler movie or something. I'll make the Penguin movie. I don't care. Squirrel Girl. It'll be better than any other the shit they've been putting out.
Make a movie about The Question. Let's just do the thing they did with Marvel, where they took Iron Man, who wasn't a super big, well-known one, and then turned him into the big thing. Do it with The Question. That's silly and fun.
Yes. Yeah, just a noir, a straight-up noir The Question movie.
Which I'm realizing is just Watchmen, actually.
Etrigan Origins.
Finally, bring the Constantine show back, but actually do it well.
Do this, but do it better.
Can we just bring back Justice League Unlimited? Like, that's all I want, really. I just want a Justice League Unlimited.
Have you seen...
We're not even on Marvel anymore.
No, we're talking superheroes. You've seen the trailer for the Blue Beetle, right?
Yeah.
George Lopez looks crazy in that trailer.
But he hasn't been doing well, has he?
I mean, I don't know if he's been doing well or not. Career-wise, probably not. I couldn't tell if you're talking... Anything. I couldn't tell if you were talking career or health-wise. It's like, I think he's doing fine. I meant career-wise. Oh, yeah. I don't think he's been doing much of anything, but he's, like, got a full-on, like, salt-and-pepper beard thing going on. He looks wild. He looks like an uncle of mine, actually.
I think that's what he's meant to be playing. Oh, no, oh, he's yeah. The dad. He might be the dad character. Well, whatever.
I don't know.
I would love to have the George Lopez show as the framing device for the Blue Beetle. Like, it's just a normal episode of the George Lopez show, then all of a sudden that shit starts happening. I'm burned out, my man. I think I've officially hit my waffle meter. I could keep going and I would lose my mind, but I think for the sake of the people listening, I think I should cut myself off.
All right, that's fine. I think they like us talking about George Lopez, but that's fine.
you can keep going. I'm cutting myself off.
We'll go ahead and just launch into socials then. Yeah, so go ahead and check us out on any, almost any, of your favorite podcasting platforms. We're on things like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Podbay, Podomatic. Honestly, Stitcher shutting down has fucked my whole thing up because it's usually the one I say right after Google, and now I got to amend that. So apologies for this one being a little bit more slapdash. But
we're doing our best.
We're doing all those things. We're also on YouTube, and we're hosted by Spotify for podcasters. So you can listen to us there as well.
Yeah.
Yay. Go ahead and send us an email. theyremadeit@gmail.com for just, you know, good things about the show, bad things about the show, suggestions for future episodes you may want us to do, or if you just want to say hi, it's also fine.
We like being told hi.
Yeah. Follow us on X, Twitter or X. Follow us there, because that's the only social media we have.
I'm going to call it Twitter until the day I die, because I'm not playing into a billionaire's midlife crisis.
that is perfectly understandable. So go ahead and follow us at that place for updates on when episodes are going to be going live, posters and things for movies and games that we have been discussing on the show, possible future episodes that we might do at some point, and little full circle diagrams that I have been putting together for the podcast as well, which funnily enough, the other day, my phone started blowing up and it was Twitter likes and things. And I was like, oh, well, we get decent Twitter traffic, but not like this. It was like hundreds of, I was like, what is happening? It was a full circle post for Eric Bauza. Because he retweeted it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. We got retweeted by Eric Bauza. It was like a couple days after he accepted an Emmy. I was like, we should not be getting retweeted by Eric Bauza.
But, we got noticed by an Emmy winner? What the hell?
Yeah, so that was Mr. Bauza,
if you're listening, hi? I don't know.
You are 100% not listening. But if you, in the off chance you are the definitive Marvin the Martian to me, my friend.
Absolutely. That is wild. Okay.
That's it for socials.
Oh man, like I don't want this fame to go to my head or nothing. I as much as I love doing this show, as much as I love having an enjoyment for doing these things, I really hope it doesn't blow up that much, because I've seen what happens to folks when they get popular on social media. They don't stay the same. It's like, if Twitter is any indication in general.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, no, if I get millions, I'm going to be the same person I was. I'm going to give, you know, a portion to charity, blah, blah, blah. But you always wonder, you know.
Buy like 1,000 ducks.
Where would you put them?
I don't know. Duck farm.
Well, that's awfully kind of you.
Yeah, no, I'd still be decent about it. I'm not that insane. But I would do something eclectic like that. I'd get a tattoo of my face, full size, on my face. I think I need to take some medicine now.
It sounds like you already have.
I think I need to go to bed. It's been a long day. As always, I'm your delirious host, Stuart.
And I'm your host, Jacob.
I thank you all for listening. I'm going to go to bed.
So long.
Please, I think I'm going to be sick.
What?
Would you please pull over the car? I am going to get sick.
Oh, okay, all right. Hey! Captain! Are you okay? Yeah. Oh, all right!